ever get that feeling like you want to really like wrap your head around something big, you know,
yeah,
something important, but like without getting totally overwhelmed by all the info out there.
Totally. It's like wanting the depth without drowning.
Exactly. And that's kind of what we're doing right now, diving deep into this whole thing about, well, possessions, you know?
Yeah.
What we have, what really matters.
Yeah, like the stuff we own, the stuff that sustains us.
Right. And our guide for this exploration is, well, it's the Gospel of Luke, specifically chapter 12, verses 13 through 34, actually.
So a pretty meaty chunk of text.
Yeah. But trust me, it's worth it. We're going to be drawing on this amazing lecture by Dr. Daniel K. Darko. It's part of his whole series on Luke. And this session is called, get this, Possessions and Provisions.
Catchy title.
So Dr. Darko sets the scene for us, you know. Jesus is on his journey, this super significant journey from Galilee to Jerusalem. And this teaching moment kind of bursts out of it like a random guy in the crowd basically interrupting with a very personal question.
Which Dr. Darko points out is like super important to remember. That whole context of, you know, readiness for the coming judgment. This whole journey has that sense of urgency, you know, preparation, looking ahead to what's coming.
So how are we going to navigate this this deep dive today? What's the plan?
Well, we're going to stick pretty closely to Dr. Darko's structure, which frankly makes a lot of sense. First, we'll look at that opening question, you know, about inheritance and Jesus's pretty blunt reply, his warning about greed.
Right, getting right to the heart of it.
Then we'll unpack that parable of the rich fool. I mean, talk about a story that sticks with you. And the lessons there are just, whoa.
Heavy stuff.
Then it's on to Jesus's teaching on, well, worry. That anxiety that we all struggle with and how God provides using these incredibly vivid examples from nature.
Like what?
The ravens and lilies specifically.
Ah, right, right.
And after that, we'll dive into Jesus's challenge to seek God's kingdom. I mean, what does that even look like, practically speaking?
Big question.
And finally, we'll tie it all together with that concluding call to generosity and this whole idea of treasure that, you know, lasts, treasure that actually matters.
Sounds like our mission here, inspired by Dr. Darko, is to basically unearth the core insights from this passage, you know, about how we view possessions, what we own, and how much we actually trust in God's provision. Seems pretty relevant to all of us, right?
Totally. I mean, who doesn't wrestle with these things on some level? So let's jump right into that opening scene. We have this, well, this guy in the crowd who just calls out to Jesus. And he calls him teacher or rabbi, like recognizing his authority, right? And he asks him to basically tell his brother to divide the inheritance. What are your thoughts on that, like right off the bat?
Well, that teacher or rabbi thing, that's interesting. It shows this guy sees Jesus as someone with real clout, especially when it comes to like the law, right? They're looking to him as someone who can not only interpret, but like enforce what's fair when it comes to inheritance. And Dr. Darko reminds us that, you know, this whole idea of inheritance is rooted in the Old Testament. Deuteronomy, Numbers. It seems pretty legit on the surface, you know? Wanting a fair share of what you're owed, family stuff can get messy.
Absolutely. Legitimate request, at least at first glance. But then Jesus's response is pretty well pointed. Man, who made me a judge or arbitrator over you? And Dr. Darko suggests this isn't just a casual comeback. It's more like a, you know, a firm correction, a rebuke even. Like Jesus is saying, look, my purpose is way bigger than just settling family squabbles over money and possessions.
Exactly. And that's when he drops that powerful statement, you know, that line that really gets you thinking. Take care. Be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. That's like the core message he wants to drive home, right?
It is. And Dr. Darko really digs into the nuances here. You know, while the question about inheritance might seem valid fairness between siblings after the parents' deaths, Jesus seems to sense something deeper going on. Maybe the motivation isn't really about genuine need, but more about, you know, I want more. Or maybe even just, like Dr. Darko puts it, a desire for evenness with his brother.
Like, even if he already has enough, he wants to make sure he has just as much as his brother. It's not about lacking something. It's about that I want what he has mentality.
Exactly. And this ties into Dr. Barco's point that, you know, the kingdom Jesus is talking about, it's not built on this materialistic idea of piling up wealth to prove your worth or something. His focus is on a completely different kind of kingdom.
Different values, different priorities.
Right. And that brings us to the parable of the rich fool. This story is, well, it's a powerful illustration of exactly what Jesus is talking about.
So set the scene for us. What's this parable all about?
Okay, so we have this rich landowner. He's not even given a name, which is interesting. Maybe he's meant to represent anyone, you know? just an average guy, but rich. And his land produces a bumper crop, like way more than he expected. But instead of like sharing the excess or maybe even being grateful, his first thought is, I need bigger barns. Got to store all this stuff. Mm-hmm. His plan is to basically hoard all this grain and goods, then just kick back and enjoy life, you know? Eat, drink, and be merry, as he tells himself.
The good life, right. At least in his mind.
Yeah, except then comes this, well, this divine interruption. God basically calls him a fool because guess what? His life is going to be demanded of him that very night. All that stuff he worked so hard to gather, all those possessions, they become instantly meaningless.
Sobering, to say the least.
Dr. Darko points out some really key details here. First, the landowner's anonymity. Like, he's one of the crowd. He could be any of us. And second, the way Luke emphasizes that it was the land that yielded the abundance, highlighting that, you know, God is the ultimate provider and not the man's own efforts. This really contrasts with the landowner's constant use of I and my, that focus on himself and what he's accomplished.
It's like Dr. Darko calls it, that philosophy of me-ism. All about his plans, his work, his future enjoyment.
Exactly. And Dr. Darko also makes the point that this guy's desire for more came from a place of abundance, not lack. He was already wealthy, but the more he had, the more he wanted. It's like this endless cycle. And his planning, it was completely centered on himself. Like he had this illusion of control over the future, which of course he didn't.
So what are the big takeaways here? What are we supposed to learn from this pretty intense story?
Well, there are a few key lessons that really jump out. First, the parable highlights the danger of being too self-focused, especially when it comes to our possessions. This kind of self-absorption, it can lead to isolation, to losing sight of where everything we have truly comes from. It's also a reminder that we can't find true, lasting happiness in just having a lot of stuff. Like, it echoes Jesus's earlier point that there's so much more to life than just possessions. And ultimately, it suggests that as followers of Jesus, we should be looking beyond ourselves, seeking a different kind of treasure, a treasure that's found in God.
It's interesting that Dr. Darko brings in those ideas from those ancient philosophers, you know, like Plutarch and Dio Chrysostom. How do their perspectives connect with what Jesus is teaching?
It's fascinating, right? Plutarch, he was around at the same time as Paul, actually, and he talked about greed as this insatiable desire that's not really about need at all. It's more like a distorted way of thinking.
Yeah.
He said these people, they're always craving more and they're on want of superfluity, stuff they don't even need. Sounds familiar, right? Mm-hmm.
Like the rich fool, building bigger barns when he already has more than enough. It's never enough, is it?
And then there's Deo Chrysostom, who emphasized that everyone knows greed is bad, like harmful, both to the person who's greedy and to those around them. Yet very few people actually manage to break free from it. He describes the greedy person as someone who's basically disliked, seen as an enemy. This, again, lines up with that idea that constantly chasing possessions can really mess up our relationships, you know, both with others and even with ourselves.
So it's not just a personal problem. It affects everyone around you.
Right. And then the parable ends with that really powerful statement that the person who piles up wealth for themselves but isn't, quote, rich toward God is ultimately a fool because, well, all that earthly stuff, it has zero lasting value when their life is over. And it makes you wonder, what does it actually mean to be rich toward God?
Right. It's not just about, like, going to church or being religious.
It probably involves, like, having a heart that's generous, a focus on things that have eternal significance, a recognition that our true security and value come from, you know, our relationship with God, not from what we own, investing in what truly matters in the long run.
And then Jesus kind of seamlessly transitions to this teaching about anxiety, almost like he's saying, okay, so you're worried about all this earthly stuff. You're anxious about how you'll be provided for. Let's talk about where your real trust should be.
And this is where we get those incredible images from nature, those word pictures, the ravens and the lilies. What do you make of those examples?
He's basically saying, look, don't freak out about your life,
yeah,
about what you're going to eat or what you're going to wear, because life is so much bigger than that.
Yeah.
He points to the ravens, you know, like they don't farm, they don't store up food, yet God feeds them. And then he asks that question that really gets you. Of how much more value are you than the birds? It's like, come on, get some perspective. And then he talks about the lilies, how they don't, like, toil and spin to make clothes. Yet even Solomon, in all his glory, wasn't as beautifully dressed as a simple flower. The point being, if God takes care of these, like, temporary, fleeting things, how much more will he care for you?
And Dr. Darko points out that phrase, you know, oh, you of little faith. It's gentle, but it's also a firm reminder of where our trust should be. Like, look around. see the evidence of God's care everywhere.
It's all around us. And Dr. Darko has some, like, really insightful thoughts on anxiety itself. He connects this teaching to the worries, the crowd, and maybe even that guy who asked about the inheritance were feeling those anxieties about basic needs.
Makes sense.
He even shares this statistic from his teaching that, like, the vast majority of the things we worry about, they never actually happen.
Really?
And even fewer are things we can actually control.
Oh.
Makes you think, right?
It really does. It's so easy to get caught up in worrying about things that, like, in the end, don't even matter, or things we can't change anyway.
Spinning our wheels.
And Dr. Darko emphasizes Jesus's very clear command, do not be anxious about life itself, because that fundamental aspect of our existence, it's ultimately not up to us. He also makes this super relevant point about how, you know, back in the ancient world, people were mostly anxious about, like, basic survival.
Yeah.
Food, shelter. But today, in our, you know, relatively wealthy societies, our anxieties might be about having enough choices or the right things. But the feeling of anxiety can be just as intense, maybe even more so.
Yeah.
And having too much can even create its own set of problems.
Right. It's like having more stuff doesn't automatically equal less worry. Sometimes it's the opposite. I remember one time I was stressing about upgrading my phone, and then it hit me. Like, how ridiculous that was. It's just a phone. Shifting my focus really brought a sense of peace.
It's about perspective, right. And then Dr. Darko brings in this Brazilian concept of tranquilo, this attitude of trust and letting go that Jesus is encouraging, to look at how God provides in nature for all living things, even for, like, the beauty of flowers, and to have that same confidence in his provision for us.
So it's not about obsessing over what we might lack, but rather shifting our attention to what we should be seeking, which is, well, the kingdom of God.
Exactly. And Jesus says, don't get hung up on what you're going to eat or drink, or even what you're going to wear. Don't worry about those things. Instead, seek his kingdom, and all these things will be added to you. And he contrasts this with, you know, the Gentiles, those who are constantly chasing after these material things precisely because they don't have that same trust in a providing God.
So how do we practically seek the kingdom? What does that actually look like in everyday life?
Well, Dr. Darko explains it as seeking God's reign, his rule in our lives and our specific circumstances. The idea is that when we truly let God be in charge, when he's at the center of our hearts and our lives, he will provide what we truly need. It's not just about praying more. It's about aligning our lives with God's values and purposes.
Like living it out, not just talking about it.
Exactly. And then Jesus gives us this incredible encouragement. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. That image is so powerful. The caring shepherd watching over his flock, the loving Father who is delighted to provide for his children.
It's really comforting. And this leads to Jesus's, like, final challenge in this passage, the call to be generous, to focus on treasure that really lasts.
Right. He says, sell your possessions and give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. This is a radical statement.
Like a complete overhaul of how we view possession.
Totally. It's like he's saying, trade your greed for generosity.
Yeah.
Stop trying to get more and more and focus on giving instead.
Yeah.
Put the needs of others before your own desire to accumulate stuff.
And that emphasis on seeking what has eternal value, that's huge. It's about aligning our hearts with things that truly last, not these temporary fragile things of this world.
Dr. Darko quotes Joel Green's commentary here, which really sums it up nicely. Green writes, seeking the kingdom is tantamount to setting one's heart on the kingdom. And because of this, you have this heavenly treasure that's untouchable by earthly troubles, by, you know, the ups and downs of life.
So as we kind of wrap up this deep dive, it's important to remember what Dr. Darko said about Luke's original audience,
yeah.
Theophilus. He was likely someone of, you know, pretty high social standing, someone with wealth and influence. So these teachings on possessions would have hit him, like, right where it hurts.
Yeah. Challenging his whole worldview.
It forces us to ask ourselves that tough question Dr. Darko poses, that question of, where do your priorities lie when it comes to what you own? Do you really, truly trust God to take care of you?
It's a gut check for all of us.
And Dr. Darko's personal story about growing up in Ghana, you know?
Yeah.
Seeing both relative wealth and the genuine joy and contentment of people with far less, it just underscores that point that having more stuff doesn't equal a better life.
It's a powerful reminder, and it brings us back to that core message. Jesus's answer to that initial question about inheritance wasn't really about dividing up property. It was about exposing that deeper issue of greed that can so easily entangle us. and redirecting our focus toward God's kingdom and the eternal treasures that truly matter.
So as you reflect on this this deep dive, consider this. What does heavenly treasure look like in your own life? Is it acts of service, personal growth, a change in how you see the world? And how might focusing on those things change your worries, change your relationship with the things you own? It's definitely something worth pondering.
Absolutely. Something to chew on.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.
Until next time.